Hello and welcome back to the CenterPass podcast. My name is Sophie Taylor and as always I'm joined by Taylor Melky. How's it going, Tay?
I am really, really good, Soph, and I'm so keen to be able to chat about all things that was this round. We had Indigenous round, of course, and then we've also got a really good chat coming up with some of our friends over in the UK, so there's plenty to discuss.
Yes, well, definitely tune in for our little chat with Lucy P and Lucy G from the Quarter Time podcast in the UK a little bit later in this episode. But first off, we're going to talk about a huge Indigenous round in the SSN. It was massive. It started off with a bang and did not relent throughout the entire round. We're going to do it a little bit different this week and we'll run through all four results first and then just have basically a chat about all the best talking points from the round. So in the first match of the round, we had the Queensland Firebirds defeated by the Melbourne Vixens, and I'm very happy about this one.
Says that with a huge grin on her face.
Always.
Almost a Cheshire cat there.
Of course. Well, the Vixens pipped Firebirds at the post 66-64. On Sunday, the first huge clash of the day saw another very small margin with the Sunshine Coast Lightning beating the Adelaide Thunderbirds 59-58. Then in the second match on Sunday, we had the Swifts beat the Magpies in the biggest margin of the round, so to speak, 62-53. And then on Monday night, we had another huge buzzer beater, West Coast Fever defeating Giants 66-65. It was just probably one of the best rounds of SSN action we've had in a few years.
I don't even know where to begin with all of that. The results were just amazing and it was on the edge of your seat types of games. I feel like the netball community as a whole were just so on edge. No one knew what was going to happen. And the predictions that we had at the start of the year are kind of shaking a little bit. You know, we had tipped that the Firebirds were clearly going to be contenders and now they're almost appearing to be pretenders at the moment, which is, for me, really hard to say. But you've got to look at the form and the performances in which they are putting out and they're really not living up to that hype and expectation. But we'll go into that a little bit further in a moment. But yeah, it was just an all-round amazing round of netball and this is what you want to see. We're not known as the world's best league for no reason and this round was definitely a showing of that. The high caliber players and just the all-round intensity was amazing.
Yeah, I don't think any, maybe one game went the way that I expected it. Two matches were down to one goal margins, one with a two goal super shot, shot on the buzzer by our new queen of netball, Rani Samerson. It was just insane. There was nothing predictable about the round. And I think what was really interesting was the teams that lost, even the teams that won, actually, it was a really inconsistent round in that teams didn't necessarily win every quarter or win in particular sections of the game. I think the Vixens actually only won because of super shots, which is something completely different there too. But it was just a really bizarre round and you never knew what was coming next. I think we all kind of went into the round thinking Firebirds, Lightning, Fever were probably going to get significant margins on the board, probably Swifts too. And then to find out that Lightning trailed Thunderbirds for such a significant period. Fever trailed for the entire first 3.5 quarters of the match before defeating the Giants on the buzzer. It was just insane.
Well, one thing we may as well just get into straight away is that of Rani Samerson. Not many people would have predicted that with Emily Mannix going out with a broken knuckle or something along those lines, that in comes goal shooter Rani Samerson, V&L star, she plays with the Aerials. We've been lucky enough to see her out in action and have praised the ground she walks on with her just amazing skill in the goal circle. And she came up to Suncorp Super Netball level and did not skip a beat. She clearly is the missing link that the Vixens need. But to play devil's advocate, it almost seems a little bit silly to make this move. Now, let me explain this because I know fans are going to be like, what are you on about? So you think about it from this perspective. You've already got a really struggling shooting attacking line with the likes of Ruby Barkmeyer and Kalia Stanton. The issue being, Rani Samerson will only be able to play these two games. So what happens when all her confidence in all the belief and the fans are behind her, and then she has to leave again because Mannix is back. You can't get rid of Barkmire and Stanton. That's not how this league works. You know what I mean? So but it makes a win. She might win these two games, but what does that mean for the other goal shooters, for the other shooters in the side, that her coaches don't believe in them? The fans don't believe in the stock and the talent that they have. And for me, it's almost a little bit of a slap in the face that it's like, we've got these shooters, they're clearly not performing. Our defender, one of our star defenders, goes out. We don't replace her with another defender. We get a goal shooter that's going to do the job. She'll be in for two games. Then she's going to have to disappear and we're going to be back to square one. So it's like 5 steps forward, 10 steps back. It sounds harsh, but when you think of it from that perspective, you have to wonder what that does for the confidence of Barkmire and Stanton. And then you're also altering the game of Kamwenda. And if she's going to be playing goal attack more often, does that mean that Kalia Stanton now gets the gig in goal shooter? So for the long run, it's a really, really interesting move. That's my take on it.
Yeah, well, it's certainly an interesting one. And I think we're really going to have to see how it goes over the coming weeks. I'm pretty sure it has actually been done before. The Adelaide Thunderbirds, when Dan Ryan was in charge, actually did the same thing. I think he brought in Charlie Hodges for, I can't remember who it was, someone else in goals. Maybe it was Langy, maybe. And it actually technically has been done before, but the issue is it does mean you do have to push someone down. And that's the question that everyone's kind of asking, is who do the Vixens bump back down to a lower level? Because at the end of the day, there's no ANL anymore. It's the Australian National Championship instead. So there's no second tier. There's only individual state top tiers. So sure, Barkmire could go back down, but the Vixens are then playing without a goal attack at all because, again, Samerson is a starting goal shooter. So do they then drop down Barkmire, who's probably one of the future players that they're looking at, or do they drop down their big pickup for the season in Stanton, who clearly hasn't been performing the way that they want her to? So it's a really difficult situation that the Vixens are in and have almost put themselves in. Like I said, I'm still trying to kind of waiting to see what they do with it because, like I said, fairly certain it has been done before where one player has been dropped down to the next tier of competition and someone brought in for them. It just puts everyone in a really sticky situation and I'm kind of, concerned about what it could mean for the season.
Well, I mean, like I said, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm more than happy to be wrong. But in that kind of situation, if a player does get bumped down, that also impacts morale and things like that. Yeah. So as we were talking about, the Vixens really like to bleed up that young core group of players and keep it a Victorian pathway player. So for me, it would almost be a bit silly if they were to drop down Barkmire because that is, as you touched on, Soph, that is their future. And then they will be playing without an actual designated goal attack. And you can see the difference, which, for example, when Stanton plays goal attack, she doesn't have those kind of running patterns of a stereotypical goal attack. And it's the same with MJ and Samerson. We saw her for patches that were playing in that goal attack position, but clearly all three of them preferred that goal shooter position. So it's a really, really interesting move. This is not to discredit the performance that Samerson put out, though. This is just thinking long run what happens next because I think she would be great to keep on and clearly definitely the Vixens need her, but it's just kind of looking at what happens next. But full credit to her. She absolutely bloody dominated and I will
against Taylor's team too. It's just even better.
I know, and it pains me. It physically pains me to say that, but credit where credit's due. The Vixens, they didn't deserve to win that, I will say that. But Samerson, you know, she rose to the occasion and full credit to her. Ice in her veins, sunk that super shot. No problems. Just and the elation on every Vixens fair or every Vixens
it's like we
face
won another
was just
grand final. It was fantastic. I do want to bring up though, everyone's talking so much about Samerson, but they forget who it was that created that last turnover to spring the ball back down the court. Katie Ann Dehaney, absolute star. I've been saying it for years. I mentioned it on Twitter the other day that I was so excited, even though it must have been 2 years ago, 2018, when Mannix broke her pinky maybe 5 weeks out from finals, just before MJ did her ACL that year. And, or maybe it was the year before. I can't remember. Either way, I remember saying back then that Katie Underhaney stepped up through those rounds when Mannix wasn't in. And we saw it last year. There were a few weeks where Mannix had back issues. And it has actually allowed Katie Underhaney to step up this season. And you can see that Simone McInnes has a lot more faith in her now than she used to. She's developed real consistency and she proves that she can be a game winner. So as much of the credit should go to Samerson for shooting that last super shot, all the credit should actually go defensively to Dehaney because she was just fantastic all game. We'll move on now because we've spent a lot of time talking about the Vixens. I love it. we'll move on and chat about some of the other games. The Lightning were kind of not themselves, but the Thunderbirds were really elevated in their game against them.
It was an incredibly confusing performance by both teams. It was almost as if they'd swapped outfits for a period of time because the cleanliness from the Thunderbirds was just really up and about. We don't normally see that level of just composure and class down the court, whereas the Lightning, for me, looked quite frazzled and they were unsure of their structures. It was a very un-Lightning-like performance. Credit to them, though, they still found a way to win, and often you see those lower-placed teams that are unfamiliar with winning, just unable to learn to win, if that makes sense. They're so used to falling short or losing that winning, even though they've been leading for large patches of the game, is just so unfamiliar to them. They don't know how to grind out that final few minutes. And it was Steph Wood that sealed the game with a really good shot. She's been inconsistent, to say the least, I think.
Oh, but I reckon the opposite. I think she's stepped up this season. Yeah, maybe that game in particular was probably one of her... Oh, actually, she had a really good start to the game and then was kind of quiet throughout the middle. But I thought she's actually had a really good season, definitely a head and shoulders above last season, where she was kind of carrying this weird niggle, was really lacking confidence. I think in patches, she's still showing that lack of confidence, but overall, I think she's actually been much better.
Yeah, actually, on second thoughts, I will kind of say that I think she has been better. Maybe I'm just thinking inconsistent in terms of just that capacity to really steer that attacking unit, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I do think in patches, she is that one player that you can kind of go to and you can rely on her to step up to the plate. And she showed clearly in this moment, the pressure moment, that she could once again do it. It's interesting also to see the way Kara Konen is kind of shaping up against the likes of some of these key defenders. She had the other week, she struggled a little bit with Bruce. And it was again the same here with Sterling, because Sterling is such an aerial mastermind that it was a bit tricky for her. But full credit to Konen, she was able to kind of work her way back into the game and really, you know, dominate at the post. She only missed two shots for the game, and that's an impressive feat when you've got the long arms of Sterling over the shot.
Yeah, well, the real kicker in this game for me was the Thunderbirds' attack line. I thought Potgieter did a good job. She definitely wasn't at her best, and she was kind of a little bit, I don't know how to describe it.
She was angsty.
A little bit angsty, yeah. She kept kind of complaining about calls that were being made, and then feeds weren't necessarily going into her very well in patches. And obviously that gets frustrating, but there'd be moments where you'd see her complaining about a feed to one of the players that feeded it to her, but she's not putting hands over the ball and not helping the defensive unit kind of get the ball back. So it was kind of frustrating to watch because we know that she can be such a huge threat, but she just hasn't quite shown it for me yet this season. And I think in comparison, Georgie Hoare just had a really good game. She stepped up when it was necessary, had some really exciting moments, kept the ball in on a few occasions, falling out of court. And I think it's like you said, the Thunderbirds have just kind of forgotten how to win. And I mean, speaking of forgetting how to win, that's exactly what happened to the Magpies against the Swifts. They led for much of the game and then all of a sudden the Swifts came out in the final quarter and just dominated.
Yeah, to kind of move on to that game, we may as well touch on that. The Firebirds, they lost. They've clearly forgotten how to win too, but that's another story for another day. I'm not salty at all.
Yes,
looking at the Magpies Swifts game, there were really, really strong patches from the Pies, and you can see the gameplay that Nicole Richardson is really starting to hone into her side. And that for me is an exciting thing, because I think in the past, Collingwood have been really sporadic in the way they play, and there's just no structure and no consistency. So that is definitely something that is starting to come to the fore now. They have those things that they can rely on and those players that are able to win ball back. For me, the most interesting move was when they brought Khalifa McCollin on in that final quarter, because I think, the final quarter is when she came on for a large chunk of it, or for the entire quarter, I should say. For me, that's kind of where the Magpies lost it. They ended up losing the last quarter 17-9. So that's a huge deficit, and ultimately that was the turning point, because the Swifts were able to get the win on the board there. But we've been calling for the likes of Khalifa McCollin to come on and really, you know, get her opportunity to shine, because we rate her quite highly. She's just got that natural flair and excitement. But for me, this was not the time to bring her on. The game is in the balance. Nelson has, for me, developed at a rate of knots this season, really strong on the take. And even when those players like Sarah Clower and Maddie Turner were attacking the hands, Nelson was ripping the ball in. And that's not something we were used to seeing. But this year it's become a bit of a trademark that she's really strong on that take. So taking her off the court was a bit of an interesting one. I know it was only for about 5 minutes, or, you know, 5 minutes of the game. But I think there was just the structural change wasn't, for me, what the Pies needed, because I don't know, just something didn't sit right.
Yeah, for me, I think it's the amount of changes that the Pies make. They tactically, I don't understand why they're being made. A lot of teams you can kind of see, oh, this player isn't firing, so we're going to replace her. Or this player's doing a really good job here, she could actually add that to the midcourt, so we'll move her out. Something like that. But the Magpies' changes are all coming at really strange times. And although I do agree to an extent that Gabby Sinclair wasn't necessarily having her most influential match, especially in that last quarter, she had a really good first half. But then I'm kind of like, why don't you bring Khalifa McCollin in for something different in the third quarter? And if that doesn't work, then bring Sinclair back on and give her a little bit of time to work back into it. It's kind of like that. There's always that fall through for the Magpies where they get so far and they're like, oh no, nothing's working, let's make all the changes now. And then nothing works because everything's just kind of happened at once. And it's very frustrating to watch, because I thought they had a really good game. To their credit, the Swifts were also fairly good. Haythornthwaite wasn't quite as potent as I wanted her to be, but Sarah Clough and Maddie Turner had another really good game, and Taylor Fraser was an absolute game changer. I will say Helen Housby has been really off this season. It was probably one of her better performances, but even then she didn't play a significant portion of the game, partially because she got vaguely injured with an overextended finger, which freaks me out, but partially just because she wasn't able to kind of inject herself into the contest.
Yeah, it was a bit of an odd one from Housby, and I do agree with you on that note, Soph, that it definitely hasn't been Housby's season, and I also think that that form is somewhat rubbing onto Nat Haythornthwaite, with the two of them normally gel really well together, and clearly they have that connection having played with the Roses over a long period of time, so they know how each other work. But for me, that connection just is not on at the moment, so the injection of Taylor Fraser was exactly what the Swifts needed. And I've been a big fan of Fraser for a while. I think that her work is great. Her preliminary work is also so impressive. She's still such a young player, but that matchup between her and Brazel was just something to behold, because such physical, highly athletic players, and the way that they were able to both kind of have an influence but still negate each other was really, really exciting for me to watch. And it was an all-round, I was going to say, impressive performance from the Swifts, in the sense that they were able to kind of continuously niggle at the Pies. So even when Collingwood did seem to get a little bit of a run on the board, they were able to at least persistently chip away at it, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I wouldn't say it was a great performance by the Swifts, but it was also just an outing that they were able to take plenty of positives out of, because they were able to make changes and make sure that they were effective.
Well, we'll quickly look to the Fever Giants game. It was insane. Monday night game, because there was a Wiggles concert on the weekend in Perth, so they couldn't have it on the Saturday or Sunday, which is so funny to me.
Priorities. But anyway,
Monday night game, I kind of loved it because being in lockdown, we don't have heaps to do. So the game was kind of insane, honestly. I still don't have words for it. It's been like a day and a half since this match played out. Fever won on the siren with a goal from Jeneil Fowler. There were plenty of moments. Jamie Lee Price was kind of called out again and again for her physicality. And I actually thought that this was one of her better physical games. I thought Verity Charles actually really struggled to get into the contest because she was overthinking what Price was doing. And Price wasn't necessarily doing anything wrong, especially in the first half. So I think JLP, and I've never been a huge fan of the game that she plays. I don't mind her as a person, but game-wise, I've never been a huge fan. But this one I actually really liked, apart from the one huge hip and shoulder in the third quarter. But apart from all that, there was the whole moment with Joe Harton getting called for a held ball that hadn't been called all game. A lot of people have gone and actually timed it now, and it was definitely under 3 seconds. And at the end of the day, what's done is done. It doesn't matter whether it was under 3 seconds or not now, but it does matter that the ball was able to traverse the entire court with less than 7 seconds on the clock. There's a penalty call. Honestly, like, the ball probably wouldn't have been shot as a goal. It probably would have been a draw if neither of the defenders in Sam Pullman or Christiana Manua actually tried to contest that ball, if that makes sense, because it was too far out.
I've got two words for you. Mashed potato. You talk of the Wiggles, I feel like that was a Wiggles performance. It was just way too much energy, way too much craziness happening out on court. No one could, for the life of them, just compose themselves for more than 3 seconds. So it was a miracle in which Harton was called for a held ball because no one held on to the ball more than 3 seconds. It was just ping-ponging around so much.
I will say the Giants did have control for the first half. It was just that second half where the Fever kind of kicked it up a gear, put on the pressure, and then that last quarter was just absolute insanity.
I think if we break it down bit by bit, for the Giants, it's incredibly heartbreaking. And the hard thing is that it was their game to lose and they lost it. And yeah. In reality, you know, they had to go through that quarantine period. It would be remiss of us not to touch on the fact that April Brownlee was unfortunately unable to come. Oh, she did go over, but then decided that probably wasn't for the best, given that she has a little bubba that she needs to look after. And, you know, a quarantine with a one-year-old's probably not the most ideal situation. So full credit to her for making that really hard decision. And I'm sure she would have loved to have been out there on court. But nevertheless, you know, the Giants put in the hard yards. They did all the work that they needed to. And then somehow the Fever just managed to string it all together. And look, for me, there were a whole heap of contentious calls throughout the game. And you're going to bite my head off for this, but I really hate when umpires, especially in the final few minutes of the game, really start to assert their dominance. It really frustrates me. It really grinds my gears, especially when they haven't done it for the entire game, if that makes sense. Like, if they've been overly cautious on a 3 second rule throughout the game, then fair enough, you pay that. But there were just little bits and pieces where I'm like, nah, don't do it. Just don't do it. Just let the play unfold. But that's just me being super nitpicky, and I quite enjoy a physical type of game because I think it sees physical in the sense that it's all within the rule books, if that makes sense. I don't want players going flying across the court and injuries and things like that. That's not pretty for anybody. But there's just way too much to digest from that game. But in all, the Giants shouldn't have lost it. So they now need to look at their structures and what they can do to ensure that that doesn't happen again. Because the fact is, they were up for way too long of that game to lose it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Just touching on what you were saying about the umpires too, though, I do think more should have been done probably from the umpires to make sure that the game was stopped from getting that intense early on. It was always going to be a hard-fought game. Two teams coming in that were undefeated, and from the get-go, players were shoving each other, and there wasn't anything done to stop that physicality from getting worse, because I don't think there was a single caution or anything handed out. And I don't necessarily think there was a requirement for that, but it would have set the tone earlier, and the umpires needed to do that earlier in this match, because you look at the Giants and the Fever, and both of them are known for giving a little bit of an elbow here or there, or really...
a little bit of argy-bargy.
Yeah, that real physicality and bringing the heat. And it definitely, if it was going to happen, if the umpires were going to assert their dominance like that, it needed to happen before halftime. Because, I mean, Courtney Bruce had a penalty brought up the court at one point towards the end of the first half, because she had shoved Joe Harton or something like that. Why aren't the umpires asserting that then and going, no, this is not on, you're the captain, you need to set a precedent? That's where I'm kind of like, we needed that to happen rather than asserting dominance later. So it was a real interesting match. Definitely, I mean, the entire round is 100% worth going back over to watch, not just because it was a hugely tight round, not just because it was Indigenous round and they had amazing dresses. The designs were just fantastic all across the board, but also just because the entire round as a whole produced some of the most impressive contests across the court, one-on-one contests. I don't think any team necessarily had a bad game this round, and I think it's really, really exciting to see given the past few rounds that we've had. Now, obviously, a huge round of SSN in the books. We're going to jump into our interview with Lucy P and Lucy G from Quarter Time Podcast now. Listen in. Now, we're very lucky to be joined by co-hosts of the Quarter Time Podcast. Welcome, Lucy P and Lucy G.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Congrats to both of you on the success of the podcast so far. It's so exciting to see our overseas friends having so much success and joy and getting so much recognition.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so kind of you guys. You guys are a big inspiration to us, so it's really awesome to hear you say that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's the first time anyone has ever called both Sophie or I an inspiration. So that's going down in the memory book just once here. But no, in all honesty, you guys have been absolutely phenomenal. We've been following closely and seeing the amount of recognition you guys get. And kudos to you, because it just continues to get better and better.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been so much fun to do. And it was just a little gap that we saw and we thought, why not try and fill it ourselves? And you can never have too many netball podcasts, right?
Oh, absolutely. No, of course not.
Well, it's been a huge year and season of netball overall. But what we're going to do first is we're going to take a look at the Vitality Netball Super League over in the UK. We haven't really gone into it heaps on the podcast here, just because it's not as accessible for people to watch over here, but we know that you guys have been well on top of it. So we wanted to do a quick VNSL rundown and kind of your thoughts on the season so far, the ladder. I know there's multiple teams that are vying for a position in the top four at the moment, and it's just been an awesome season overall.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I mean, to be able to watch all the games live is amazing. We've never had that before. In the UK, it's been one game per week has been shown on Sky. But for this season, we were obviously able to see all the games, which has meant a much kind of greater level of scrutiny of the games and the players. And just being able to see those youngsters coming through has been incredible. I think it's fair to say that the top three is very predictable and is what we all kind of expected at the start of the season. You've got Team Bath topping the table, Loughborough Lightning coming in second, and Manchester Thunder. And even though we've still got a couple of rounds to go, they're now guaranteed a space in the top four based on their number of points and wins. But this fourth place position is really up for grabs, especially after what happened yesterday. So there's still four teams in contention for that fourth spot. So Wasps, Sirens, Rhinos and Mavericks, which just makes it super exciting. And that's exactly what we want from the end of the season, is this real race to the finish, and we don't know who's going to get it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think this is actually possibly, someone's going to tweet me and tell me I'm wrong, but possibly one of the most competitive that we've had ever this season, because there is so much uncertainty around who's going to get that fourth position. And I think since 2016, I think it was, when Storms team changed quite significantly. Tamsin Greenway left and took a load of players with her. It's been relatively predictable who that top four is going to be. So having this competition and real contention for that last spot has just been so exciting. And like Lucy said, we've never had this level of access before, ever. And I really hope we don't go back to having to keep score on Twitter next season, but who knows? But yeah, it's been a terrific year.
Well, that's something that I definitely want to touch on. Over in Australia at the moment, clearly we don't have every Suncorp Super Netball game broadcast live to air. There are options to watch it, whether it be via the Telstra app or there are other avenues. But to have that level of exposure and as you touched on, the scrutiny that comes with it and the ability for more fans to actually watch the game, what does that mean to netball over in England?
It's just been an absolutely catastrophic rise in attention, and it's been amazing to see how much talk and interest there's been online. And Sirens have got this campaign called Headlines Not Sidelines. I don't know if you guys have seen.
Yeah.
And it means that there's been so much media presence, there's been loads more talk about it, and you really feel like the momentum that we lost after obviously the season being cancelled last year has really been regained. So it's just about continuing that and carrying on that momentum into next season, and also making that translate into people buying tickets, people buying memberships, and really showing up for the game as well, because it's all very well a core group of really dedicated fans talking about it online, but until that becomes into the kind of national consciousness, which I think we're still a long way behind Australia in terms of that level. We're very much a football nation, and that's what people are interested in, and that's what they're watching. So there's a lot of progress still to be done, but I mean, I feel like netball has taken so many steps forward in the UK, and hopefully that translates into more success for the Roses program, hopefully next year, and then kind of future years of the VNSL as well.
Yeah, the thing for me is the exposure of a whole heap of players that we might not have seen before. So when we were only having one game a week broadcast, the likes of I don't know, Alice Harvey or Tash Pavelin, if their team was playing that week, they might not have taken to court. You basically wouldn't see them for the majority of the season. And they've been some real sort of hidden gems, I think, in the league. And being able to see them out on court every single week or most weeks has been a real game changer. And I think in terms of the Roses program as well, having that exposure, I think is going to be great things for us, to like with Fumi Fidoju, who's now part of the Futures program. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Next year, I think, is going to be really interesting comm games. And I do hope that this greater exposure for the BNSL does contribute to our national success as well. And I think the big question for me is, what happens next year? What happens next year? Are we going to go back to one game a week, or are we going to have, again, another season where every game is shown?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a huge season, and obviously you've touched on hidden gems and some of those younger players, and they've extended the bench this season, haven't they, 2 to 5 players instead of 3, is that right?
Yeah,
you have 12 now in the benches, and then they've got usually, is it 15 in total signed, Luce?
Yeah, so you can have a squad of 15, and I think it's normally like 10 sort of signed players and then 5 training partners, but you can have, I think, is it 12 on a bench? It is 12 on a bench.
Yeah, it is 12, but not all the franchises declare like these are our 5 training partners and these are our 10 contracted. So it keeps that level of competition. And I think we've definitely seen those young players stepping up. I think Mavericks in particular, you've actually seen a lot of their players come through and get starting positions. Like Chloe Essam started yesterday, and you would never have predicted that she would be starting this season. And it's been very much performance-based promotion of those players, which I think is really fantastic.
Well, that's definitely something that I found last year with the Suncorp Super Netball, is that when the teams did have access to that 12 player roster, you could see some of those young stars coming through. We saw the likes of Georgie Horges and Sunday Ariang actually get recognition, and now this season they've earned full-time rosters. And much of the same with the VNSL at the moment, that those younger players are actually getting a chance to ply their trade and win that starting position, which in turn is then helping develop that Roses program, which is another exciting prospect for international netball as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. It's been huge seeing the amount of young talent coming through in any of the pathways. But speaking about pathways, something I wanted to touch on was there's been a lot of talk this year about VNSL being used as a pathway instead of its own league. And I kind of wanted to ask you guys about that, because I think we briefly touched on it on your podcast earlier on this year when we joined you back in January or February or something. But I think Australians have started to take a lot more notice of the VNSL this year, at least the people that I've been following on social media. So I really want to hear your thoughts on kind of this idea of it as a pathway where Aussies and New Zealanders go away to kind of get better and then come back.
Yeah, I mean, I hate it. I hate that that is the setup, but I don't think that you can deny that it is in a way. I don't think you can argue that we are at the same level as SSN or ANZ yet. We're just not, and we're making great strides to get there. And we're certainly, this is probably the most competitive and the best quality season that we've ever had before. But that is still a fact that we are not at that same level, and therefore the other leagues will still treat us in a way as that feeder league. I hate the terminology. I hate being classed as the feeder league, as like a lower level thing. But I do think in a way it speaks to the upcoming quality of the league, that they are sending players over here so that they can get better. So we're making them better and then sort of sending them back off. But yeah, I don't like it, but I do think it's a fact.
But you are starting to see as well. I mean, I think in some ways we do it to ourselves a little bit. Like, we do see ourselves as the little sister of the netball world, and we don't give ourselves enough credit. But you start to see players coming back like Serena Guthrie, Layla Guscoth, Beth Cobden. You know, they've all been playing in Australia and have now decided to come back. So there are definitely those massive amounts of talent in the Vitality Netball Super League, but I don't think it's consistent enough across the league to put us on a level with the Australian and New Zealand leagues. And I mean, Lucy and I have been quite vocal about our sort of thoughts on where we think the league should go in the future, and whether we think that fewer teams would actually be a real advantage, because at the moment you get some games and they are just a whitewash, basically. It's always gonna, you know, go one way. Like Thunder versus Storm yesterday, yes, Storm put out a good performance, it was probably one of their better performances, but still it was a convincing victory by Thunder, and that's not edge of your seat action. That's not preparing players for those high pressure international situations where it's really close, because you're going to get those sorts of games. So we are very kind of keen on the idea of having fewer teams and making it more competitive. And then if you sort of really whittle down the talent pool, you will get games that are very, very close to the quality and the standard that you see in SSN, because the at the moment, I think the player pool is a bit diluted and is a bit too broad to really create those high quality matches.
You bring up a great point, because that was going to be my next question, is that how do you get rid of that stigma around being that feeder league? Because if you've got so many great players that are actually leaving, you look at the number of Roses players that are actually playing out in the SSN, how do you then make the VNSL a draw card competition?
Well, it's all to do with the purpose of what the league is. You know, is it a league to prepare the Roses for competition, or is it a league to become the best league in the world? And that Suncorp has been very clear about, we want to be the best league in the world. And so that's been their motivation, and that's been what's been driving them. But over here, we sort of haven't really decided. And it's like, well, half of the Roses are playing in Australia, so it's not preparing all of those Roses. You know, is it really bringing the best talent coming through, or are we now, you know, just spreading ourselves too thinly across the country? So I think we need to streamline. I think we need to narrow down the number of teams for definite, and really focus our attention on making each week a quality competitive set of matches, because at the moment we don't do ourselves any favors when one team's going to win by 20 or 30 goals. And that's how we take ourselves more seriously, and I think that's how we move on, is we make those games the best spectacle of netball that we can produce as a UK.
I don't even know what else you can add to that. I think that's put so succinctly. I very strongly believe that we have to have fewer teams in order to spread that talent pool out. So you've got the best players playing in a smaller number of teams, and that in itself will naturally make it more competitive. And I think as well, you have to look at the infrastructure of all of the different franchises. You know, you've got sort of more professional setups like Leeds Rhinos, who do have a full-time training program, and then you've got the likes of Celtic Dragons, who don't even have an NPL's team. So we're not even competing on it. The franchises aren't even competing on an even footing, really. So we have to take strides in order to professionalize the game and also give our athletes a chance to be able to become the best in the world. Like, it's all well and good, you know, us being that like feeder league and this, that and the other, but actually the vast majority of our athletes, those outside of the Roses program, are full-time students. They're doctors, they're solicitors, they're lawyers. And I think we have to almost be a bit kinder and a bit more realistic in our expectations of them when we don't afford them the opportunity to be able to train properly full-time and actually dedicate themselves to being athletes.
Yeah, definitely. Something I wanted to quickly touch on is, obviously you mentioned wanting to whittle down the lead, like marginally. What do you think then would happen to the fan base? Obviously there's a few teams, Sirens and Dragons obviously are Scottish and Welsh. Obviously there's teams that are very location based. And if you were then to remove teams, do you think fans are fans enough of the sport as a whole to then go, okay, I'm going to go for this team instead? Or would there be that worry that fans are just going to go, well, this isn't for me anymore, I can't get to games, I'm just going to kind of let it go?
So when you had the Yorkshire Jets disappear from the league a few years ago, you know, those netball fans in Yorkshire, they didn't go anywhere. They just probably supported Thunder for a few years, and then now they've got Rhinos back. So things can change. And I think even if you did decide, okay, we're going to get rid of a certain number of franchises, that doesn't mean that they're going away forever. And that doesn't mean that they won't have other local franchises to support. But I don't think you really have in the UK as many like diehard for their team fans. Mm-hmm. What you have is people who support netball and they'll go and watch netball regardless of who's playing. They're not going to be like, okay, I'm going to absolutely live and die for London Pulse. Although obviously we do support London Pulse. That there's not so much of that real like one team mind. I think everyone generally supports netball as a whole. And I think that people would be supportive, although they might in the moment be not very happy that their team had potentially been cut from the league. There's always the potential that a team could re-enter, or that the competition below, like the NPL, gets better, improves. We see more teams in the Premier League and we start to see that level of competition as well as a real, and then that's the feeder league into the Vitality Netball Super League.
Yeah, I don't think the fans will go anywhere. Like Lucy says, I think they're fans of the sport more than you'll have a few who are diehard fans. I know Thunder have some diehards. I think Storm also have some diehards, but I do think that they will spread themselves out because they want to support the sport rather than like diehard for the team. I think you have to also, when you're looking at, you know, which teams could potentially be cut, I'm not gonna say who I think it should be, because people will come at me hard, but I do think you also have to look at what the franchise is doing outside of performance. So what are they doing in the community? You know, people could argue that London Pulse could be on the chopping block because they're down towards the bottom of that table, but actually the work that they do in the community and the example that they've set in terms of getting sponsorships and partnerships and really pushing towards that professionalization, I think also needs to be taken into consideration. And I think geographically as well, we are more heavy down the south. We've got more teams down south than we do up north. So I don't think you could, I mean, could you say let's cut Sirens because they're all the way up top and historically they haven't been super successful, although they have been amazing this year. You do have to take that into account. I don't think you can just leave, you know, all of Scotland and the north of England with absolutely no one. There's just so many factors that come into play when making these decisions.
There's been a bit of speculation over in Suncorp Super Netball land with Collingwood Magpies, for example. They clearly don't have the huge supporter base in which many people thought that they would gather because of the strong ties to the actual AFL club. But then there is that pulling for example, Tasmania to get a team. So there's that talk about whether or not they change hands, and then Tassie now gets Collingwood or something along those lines, where Collingwood fold, but essentially a new team comes to the fore, which is almost what you guys are talking about, that while there might be teams that do disappear, for example, there is always that opportunity for a new club to kind of be brought back to life.
Yeah, because we have a franchise model, as long as you can prove that you are financially viable and, you know, you've got the infrastructure there, any Tom, Dick or Harry could come in. Well, I say any Tom, Dick, it's a hard process, but in theory, anyone could say, I want to start a franchise in Norfolk, I don't know. And as long as you've got the money and the infrastructure to do that, then you can. So you can have teams sort of popping up in maybe cold spots throughout the UK. That is a possibility.
And I think we shouldn't be afraid of change. You know, I think I saw Pam Cookie say we've had the Super League's been going since 2005, and we have had X number of different iterations of number of teams and different teams in it and out. And I think, you know, that is the way that sport goes. Things change. You know, obviously you might be really tied and invested to one team, but that doesn't mean that some of the players might go somewhere else. And then you think, okay, now I support this team. It's variable, and we shouldn't be afraid to make those changes, because that's what will help keep moving that ball forward and stop us from stagnating, basically.
Something that we wanted to ask about is obviously the England talents in Australia, New Zealand. Obviously, the main one that we kind of wanted to talk about is George Fisher, just because we've always really liked her on the podcast. I feel like I say this every week. And I actually, when I first started paying attention to VNSL a few years ago, it was Bath and Mavs that I paid attention to. Bath because of Serena Guthrie, and Mavs because we could see this young player, George Fisher, coming up through the ranks. And I was just so impressed. What have you guys thought of her kind of journey this season?
Wow. I mean, what an amazing way to start the season in ANZ. She's been very, very consistent. I think, so I was just looking actually, and she's the most accurate shooter in the ANZ on 92%. That is ridiculous. She's the second highest goal scorer after Grace Wecky. And I mean, those numbers, you can't argue with that, can you? That has been an incredible introduction for her. And personally, as a Roses fan, I am extremely excited that she has done so well under there, because there obviously was the risk that she potentially could go and not be at the level of the physicality and it be a big jump up for her. But she's just taken it, you know, like a duck to water, and she's been absolutely fantastic. I've loved watching her out there.
Yeah, for a debut season, I mean, holy smokes, she is absolutely killing it. But what I love the most is that you can tell how much she is loving it. Smiling every game, you see her every interview, post-match, pre-match. She is just loving life, and that's the thing for me that I like to see. She's really gone out there and taken that opportunity. And she is still so young. She's like, what, 22, 23
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, 22, I think.
Yeah, she's a baby. So to see her take the opportunity and absolutely own that starting goal shooter spot, I think she's going to be an absolute superstar of world netball over the next 10 years.
We're going to go back to the VNSL now before we quickly wrap up. I want to hear your picks for the finals this season. Who do you think will take that last spot in the top four, and who's your pick for the premiership?
Okay, I'm going to go first here. So I think, unfortunately, that I think it will still be Wasps. I don't think Rhinos will make it, because they needed to win against Loughborough yesterday. So I think Rhinos and Sirens and Mavs will miss out, unfortunately, but I'm not happy about it. And my tip for winning is the same as it was before when we recorded the first ever episode of the podcast. It's Team Bath. I don't see any other scenario, and I personally will eat my hat if it's not Team Bath at the end of this season. What do you think, Lucy G?
Yeah, I mean, I don't just want to say the same as you, because that's a bit boring, isn't it? But I do think you're right. So yeah, I do also begrudgingly I think it will be Wasps, but it's all going to pin on tonight, I think. And Lucy and I are actually going to watch live tonight, so it's going to be great. I think Mavericks will be super, super disappointed with that loss yesterday. So either they will come out of the blocks firing and they will take it to Wasps and absolutely decimate them, or it's just going to be a step too far and they've sort of lost the plot a little bit and they just won't be able to get themselves back in. So it is all going to pin on tonight, but I do think Wasps will take it. And it will definitely be a Bath Lightning final, I reckon. And I'm a little bit torn about who's going to actually take it. I think in theory it should be Bath, but I wouldn't discount Lightning. I really wouldn't. Like, I think Bath have almost peaked a little bit too early and they've been on a slight downward trajectory over the last maybe three or four rounds, where Lightning have sort of continually going up, maybe plateaued a little bit, but they are still on the upward side. So I would maybe say Lightning, just to mix it up a bit.
Very interesting. It's been huge. I'm hoping Bath gets it just because I'm a biased Bath supporter and have been for like 2 years now. But I really do think Lightning could really challenge them. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Well, thank you so, so much to both of you, both Lucy P and Lucy G, for joining us this week on the Center Pass podcast. Just quickly, what's the best way for people to stay up to date with you guys and the podcast?
Definitely check us out on social media. We are at Quarter Time Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, even LinkedIn, if that's your jam. And we release episodes every week. So the next one will be coming out on Friday, and it is a big one.
Oh, it's a huge one. Huge. Probably the biggest yet. Biggest yet.
Yeah, we love a good tease. My goodness. You definitely have to listen into that one.
For sure.
You heard it here first. Thank you so much again to Lucy P and Lucy G for joining us. And with that, we'll go straight into our quick wrap of the ANZ Premiership. Obviously, we just touched on George Fisher and how influential she's been, but it was a really exciting round overall.
Yes, well, George Fisher's Southern Steel got over the top of the Northern Mystics in an absolute thriller of a game. So it was 58-63 in favour of the Steel. Fisher was once again really influential under the post and just cool, calm and collected. The Steel had a real tactical approach this time round and got the job done. The next game saw the Central Pulse defeat the Waikato Bay of Plenty Magic 64-53. Conventional clinical performance from the Pulse. The Magic welcomed back Holly Fowler, who is returning from her second ACL, so it was great to see her back out on court. And then looking at the Northern Stars mainland tactics game, my gosh, was this an absolute nailed biter. It went to overtime. The mainland tactics actually had majority of the game. Like, it was in the palm of their hands and Northern Stars just went, I think not. They ended up stealing the win 57-56. Just much like the SSN, welcome to an absolute thrilling round of netball action. So great to see some of these young players out on court. We saw Claire O'Brien, who's actually played with the Giants. She got her first full game over in the ANZ Premiership for the Mystics. She was really exciting to watch out on court. So plenty of positives to take out of that round.
Yeah, definitely. I do want to touch on the Magic game quickly. Grace Carter actually played the entire game out in goal attack, which I kind of question. They had one really good quarter, the Magic, but why wouldn't you put on Kiana Williams? She's been so good this season. And then to see Carter, obviously she has a great connection with Seabass at the post, but to see Carter in there, she wasn't necessarily accurate. She only shot at 43%. It was just kind of frustrating to watch that match. And after kind of all the heat of the last couple of matches, seeing that one go out to an 11 goal margin in the end was kind of sad to see, especially because the Magic have shown just what they're capable of this season. They just, I mean, like many of the SSN teams, just have kind of forgotten how to win. But it's been a huge week of action. We've had a little bit of a longer episode today, so hope you've enjoyed that. As always, go follow us on social media at CenterPassPod on Twitter, CenterPassPodcast on Facebook. Always feel free to send us messages, chat to myself or Taylor on Twitter. We're always happy to have a little discussion about netball, and we'll see you next week.